I think the single most important lesson, the single most important message that I received in conversations with God is the first message that I received in conversations with God. I believe it's on page 4 or 5 of the very first book. You understand that the Conversations with God books cover 3,000 pages, actually more than that, 3,000 plus pages. But of the 3,000 pages, the most important message occurs on, I think, page 3 or 5 of book 1. And I'm told that this message really is all we need. Everything else after that is superfluous, unnecessary. If we simply embraced this single notion, this single message, everything we've been looking for in our lives, everything we've been hoping to experience, everything that we've been yearning to know and to understand and to express through ourselves, as ourselves, would be available to us. Not only that, not only would our individual lives improve dramatically and produce the experience for which we have longed for lo these many years, but society in general, that is, the world itself, the global population, would experience the same kind of shift in our collective experience. The world would change overnight if we simply embrace this single message. And the message comes in English in 4 words, 4 simple words in the English language that would change the world in just a single moment. So the question is, what would it take for the largest number of us, for one more than half of humanity to embrace this message? So here comes the message. It's the most important message that I believe you'll ever hear from God or from anyone else. We are all one. Wir bin alles eins. I don't speak German very well, but I did my best. We are all one. Now, I know that when I make a statement like that, it's the opposite. It's contrary to what we've been told and taught most of our lives. That is, most people have been told or taught exactly the opposite. We've been told that we are separate, in fact. We live in a milieu, in an environment of separation, in which we imagine ourselves to be separate from each other, separate from life itself in the broadest sense. That is, we are observing life and participating in life, but we are not in any way creating the life that we are participating in or observing. We don't see ourselves as part of the process of creation, but rather as simply participating almost from a distance from it. And we certainly see ourselves as separate from God, those of us who believe in God. Not everyone, of course, believes in God. The largest number of people do. Sociological studies have shown, anthropological studies have shown that nearly 85% of the world's people believe in some kind of higher power. Call it God, Brahman, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever word you want to use to refer to that ineffable essence that we think of as the divine. But there is a substantial portion of humanity, 10, 15, perhaps 20%, who have no thought about that. They don't believe in any kind of higher power at all. But whether you believe in God or don't believe in God, we all believe in separation. That is, the sense that we are other than everything else. And we believe in this idea that we're separate from everybody and everything else in order to hold on to our particular identity. We have this thought that if I imagine myself to be one with everything else and everyone else, that I would lose my sense of myself, that I'll lose my individuality, that I'll really lose me. So we fight against the idea that we are one with everyone and everything. And we certainly struggle against the idea that we are one with God, those of us who believe in God, because we've been taught exactly the opposite, by those who teach us about God. Nearly every teacher about God, not every teacher, but almost every teacher, tells us that God is over here, somewhere up here, and we are down here. That we and God are separate. That God's here, we're over here, and our job on earth is to get back over here, to get back to God. That God is way over there someplace. So, the experience that we have is an experience of what we would call a separation theology. And most of the people of the earth who believe in God believe in a separation theology. Again, God is there, and we're over here. And never the two shall meet, except maybe on Judgment Day. Maybe on Judgment Day, when we die, we meet God, and God passes judgment and decides whether we have been good enough to come back home, good enough to get back whence we came, to return to God. If we haven't been good enough, if we've committed too many sins or the wrong sins, the wrong offenses, then we're not going back home to God. We're going down the other way to that place that we call Hades or hell or whatever we call it, place of damnation. And that might sound silly to some people, but billions of people, not a few people, billions of people believe what I've just said to be absolutely true. In fact, they will tell you that I am going to hell for telling you that it's not true. So let us all hope that they're wrong, because I'm not looking forward to going to hell, even though most of the interesting people are there, now that I think about it. But the truth is that we live in an experience of separation theology. A separation theology sets the stage for humanity's most dysfunctional behaviors. A separation theology automatically generates a separation cosmology. That is a cosmological way of looking at things that says that not only are we separate from God, but everything is separate from everything else. That's the cosmological construction of life itself. And a separation cosmology produces a separation psychology. That is a psychological profile that says that I as an individual am separate from all other individuals and from everything else in life. So here I am, kind of like a lonely island on a sea, you know, all by myself. And it's, you know, me against the world, so to speak. And the problem with a separation psychology is that it automatically produces a separation sociology. That is an entire society that separates itself into groups, political parties, religions, ethnicities. And so we have a society that separates itself from other aspects of itself. And the problem with a separation sociology is that it inevitably leads to a separation pathology. That is, pathological behaviors of self-destruction. We see evidence of that throughout human history. So we see then that a separation theology creates a separation cosmology, which creates a separation psychology, which creates a separation sociology, which creates a separation pathology. And that is why the world is the way it is today. That is why it is possible for us to kill each other in the name of God. In God's name. Can we stop the killing in God's name? But when we think about this business of separation, we begin to look for guidance. We ask God, those of us who believe in God, to give us guidance, What does God say about all of this? Fascinatingly, what God says is just the opposite. God says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the all-knowing, the all-powerful, the everywhere present essence of life itself. God declares itself to be everywhere present. Now, if God is everywhere present, that means that God must be over here, in me, and in you, and in everyone else. Because if I am to declare that God is everywhere present, but God is not in me, that would make me some pretty exclusive real estate, be the only place in the universe that God is not. But of course, God is everywhere present, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the up and the down of it, the left and the right of it, the here and the there of it, the before and the after of it, the all in all. Isn't it interesting that even religions say that God is the all in all? But even though religions say that God is the all in all, religions refuse to acknowledge that God is us. So we have a contradiction. God is the all in all except not us, but everything else. So conversations with God teaches a different idea, brings us to a different understanding, because this is the truth. There is nothing but one thing. All things are one thing. There is only one thing in existence, and that one thing is the only thing there is. So the very first message of conversations with God is the most powerful message of all. We are all one. Now, the reason that's powerful is that it has more than simply conceptual application. It's not just a concept. Oh, what a nice idea. We are all one. It has practical applications. You understand that the implications of the idea that we are all one are enormous. If we took that idea and actually believed it, if we actually embraced it, that there's no separation between any of us, that we are all one, if we actually applied such an idea in the world at large, everything would change virtually overnight. Religions would change, for instance. Politics would change. Economics would change. Politics would see the end of hidden agendas and power plays and the demonization of people who hold opposing points of view. We would suddenly find ourselves working together to solve our most pressing problems because we're all one. We wouldn't have political parties saying that you're wrong and I'm right. We just have different ideas about how to solve our problems, but we would be in the same boat. We would see ourselves as one body. Thus, politics would serve its highest purpose and its grandest goal. If we apply this to religion, we would see the end of separation theology, the end of the idea that God's over here and we're down over here. But more importantly, the end of an idea that there's only one way to get there. You can only get back to God one way. You have to belong to the right religion. If you don't belong to the right religion, you can't get back home to God. But if we're all one, we don't have to get back home to God. We're already there. We never left to begin with. So there's no getting back home that has to be done. We're simply already where we choose to be, in the arms of a loving deity. Because we are that. We are the loving deity we're trying to get back home to. Can you see how this would change every spiritual construction held by human beings on this planet? And religion would change, and finally, finally serve its highest purpose and its grandest goal. Economics would change as well. We would bring an end to bigger, better, more as a yardstick for international success. The new bottom line in the world would be how we could live in dignity, how each of us can make sure that we have all that we need to move through our lives joyfully and with happiness, and without having to stress and strain just to simply survive. The survival instinct would be shifted and changed forever, and it would become an instinctive motivation, an instinctive desire to simply express divinity. So our global economics would change either, and finally serve its highest purpose and its grandest goal. Everything would change. Education would change if we thought we were all one. It would be an end to the idea that propaganda should substitute for history. Right now, that's what most education is. It would also be the end of teaching simply subject matters, you know, memorization. Currently, most education is about memorizing. If you're in third grade, fourth grade, eighth grade, or 12th grade, you are asked to memorize stuff. When was the Battle of the Bulge, or when was Napoleon, or whatever. We're trying to memorize things. And we teach subjects, and you know, subjects rather than concepts. Concepts like fairness. I wonder why they don't have courses in school. Fairness, honesty, companionship, love. Wouldn't it be interesting if they taught a course, Love 101, a simple course in how to experience that we are all one. How to experience that what I do for you, I do for me. And what I fail to do for you, I fail to do for me. Why don't we teach that? If we taught that, then the academic subjects, which have to be learned as well, but the academic subjects would make much more sense to us, and we would apply those academic topics in entirely different ways. And finally, education would serve its highest purpose and its grandest goal. This would be true throughout human society in every area of our interactive endeavors, if we simply embrace the notion that we are all one. So I am told that this single message would change everything on the earth. Of course, it would obviously bring an end to war. That's a given. We see that immediately. We would never again find ourselves competing with each other for what we imagine to be limited resources, because we would understand that there is more than enough for everyone. We would not compete each other in a battle of ideas either, making the other person wrong simply because their ideas are different from our ideas, especially the ideas, as I mentioned earlier, the ideas about God. We would bring an end to war simply because we would never find it possible to treat another person in a way that we would not want to be treated. Because if we're all one, then it really is true. It's not just a concept, but it's a reality that what I do to you, I do to me. So I would never do anything to you that I would not want to have done to me. That would automatically bring an end to war. In fact, all of humanity's problems, all of the problems of humanity that are created by human beings, I'm not talking about problems like tornadoes or hurricanes or natural disasters, earthquakes and so forth, but the problems that we create on the planet are economic and social and financial and spiritual and political problems. Those problems would disappear virtually overnight if we simply decided that we are all one. We would create a whole new way to interact with each other and a whole new way to interact with the world. And by the way, not incidentally, we'd find a whole new way to interact with ourselves. Because the biggest sense of separation that I haven't mentioned yet is experienced by an extraordinarily high number of people. A large percentage of people actually feel themselves separated from themselves. They're out here someplace. They're standing out here watching themselves. They're actually observing themselves living life as if they were actors on a stage. And they can have another set of eyes out here watching themselves, behaving the way they're behaving. And they even forget themselves. They even forget who they are. Often, many people say to somebody, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I said that. I'm sorry that I did that. I just forgot myself." We actually say that. I forgot myself. How can you forget yourself unless you imagine that you're separate from yourself, that there's a part of you over here watching yourself? So the end of that psychotic split, the end of that psychosis, the end of that sense that I'm here and I'm over there watching me here, that sense of separation from self would also end when we gave up the notion of separation and we finally embraced the idea that we are all one, that nothing on the earth, nothing in the cosmos, nothing in the entire universe is separate from anything else. So I invite you to do something most unusual. I invite you to embrace a new idea. We are all one with everything. There is only one thing in the universe, and that's all there is. And all of us are that. Now, is this counter to what we're taught by the world's great religions? Actually, no. Let's look at what Jesus had to say about this. I'm kind of curious. I was curious when this message was first given to me in conversations with God. We are all one. How can that match up with what we're told in, let's say, the Bible, to use one of humanity's most sacred holy books? Well, let's take a look at that. At John chapter 17 in the Bible, the Gospel of John, we hear the words of Jesus himself. And I'm going to read these to you verbatim. Jesus said, "And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they may also be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they may also be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me, and the glory which thou gavest me, I may have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one." The point here is that Jesus prayed to God the Father, his understanding of God. He prayed to God that his being here and declaring his oneness with the Father would be embraced by all of us, that we would all understand that we are one with the Father and one with each other, that we may be all one. But it's not just the words of Jesus himself where the Bible tells us that we are all one. In Romans chapter 12, we find, "And so, though we are many, we are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Individually members one of another." You can't get more clear than that. But you can also go to 1 Corinthians in the Bible, where we read, "Because there is one bread, there are many, but only one body." Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body. I'm sorry, can that be misinterpreted? We who are many are one body? Isn't that the whole point that Conversations with God makes in its simple, contemporary statement? We are all one. you'll find the same kinds of understandings, the same kinds of statements in the other spiritual scriptures that serve humanity as well, in the Quran, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Book of Mormon, in the Upanishads, in the great spiritual literature of the great human religions. You will find replete with statements of our oneness. The question is not whether we've been told that we are all one. The question is whether we're going to believe it, whether we're going to accept it as the truth. And then to go the final step, not only whether we accept it conceptually as the truth, but whether we can find a way to live it functionally as reality. That's where the great movement of humanity will take us in these days and times just ahead. To move from accepting conceptually to functioning as reality, the great truths of life, and the only truth that really matters. And so Conversations with God was right. We need only hear one statement. All the rest is just frosting on the cake. Additional information, more data to help us understand the implications of the first statement, which is the only statement we ever needed to hear. We are all one. When I treat you as I would want to be treated, or as one of our great teachers put it, quite simply, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. When I treat you as I would want to be treated, 95% of the man-made problems that are facing humanity today would go away overnight. Just that fast. What are we waiting for? How much more killing are we going to tolerate? How much more misery are we going to create? What are we waiting for? Let that be the question.